Dear brothers and sisters, man body is considered to be the most golden opportunity that we have got. All scriptures have spoken very highly of it. And in scriptures, who are speaking? The masters of the past. They say it is a golden opportunity. Why? Because we can know God in this man body alone, and no other body. Fortunately, we are with God, the man body. We are all sitting here. Some 20, 15, 20, 30, 40, 60, 70 years old people. We have to consider calmly whether we have really known God. If so, we are fortunate, most fortunate. We have joined for that purpose in the very school of thought, and we are bearing their labels. Some of Hinduism, some Christianity, some Sikhism, some Buddhism. That shows we have joined those schools of thought. The main purpose was arising now to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves. And I explained to you last night, there are teachers and teachers. And also the word master is there. So master, what does specially mean by a master? So I explained to you last night that master is one in whom God is manifest. He is world made flesh. And dirt amongst us. As the highest aim of a man body is to know God, and to know God first, you must know yourself. Because God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, by the mind or intellect. So it is soul, the conscious entity, which is of the same as that of God. When you know Him, only then we will be able to know God. The first question arises, to know oneself, and all masters of the East and West gave out. Well, the Greek philosophers, or Latin philosophers, or Persian philosophers, or others of the East, they all said the same thing, man know thyself. So to man know oneself is not at the level of feelings, not drawing inferences. They are both subject to error. Seeing the bone. So it is knowing oneself means we are conscious entities, but we are now identified in mind and outgoing faculties, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We cannot differentiate ourselves, discriminate ourselves from the body and outgoing faculties. So it is a practical question, how to rise above body consciousness. And know oneself and know God. So master meant, you see, teachers are meant in all subjects which pertain to the outgoing faculties, mind or intellect. So world religion means rings back and leads you to bind. To bind, first know ourselves and bind ourselves to the overflow of God. The one who is adept in that science who knows himself, who knows God, who is aware of God all around him, within him and below him and above him, and make others give way up to have some experience of their self by raising them about body consciousness and giving them contact with the God, the expression power, which is God world, the outer aspects of which are light and sound. God is light and God is sound, the music of the spheres. So, the Master is meant for one who is aware of this world also, knows our condition where we are passing through this world, and his body appears to be on earth guiding us, but he is the mouthpiece of God. He speaks as inspired by God. That is the mouthpiece of God. And he sees God everywhere and opens our inner and single eye to see the light of God. So Masters, when they come, they give us this demonstration, how to rise above body consciousness, how to know ourselves, and we begin to see God. Not in the eyes of flesh and bones, but that the single eye within you, the third eye, latent eye, achieves itself within you, which opens only when you withdraw your attention from all outside, rise above body consciousness to the seat of the soul, the body, which is at the back of the eyes. We are at the time of death, soul is withdrawn. When man dying, his eyes are upverted, eyeballs, back the eyes. So he is competent to give you this demonstration after how to have that. So where the world philosophies end, there religion starts. So Master is meant especially for such a person who has solved the mystery of life and also enables us to solve the mystery of life. As he sees, you begin to see. That is why Christ says, I have come to make those people see, those see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. What does it mean? We have to draw our attention from all outside. So long as our attention is outside, we see the outside. When it is withdrawn from outside, you do not see. It is all darkness. When you close your eyes, it is darkness, and you withdraw your attention from all outside and drive it whole attention within you, then you see light. So, it is said in Quran that God made man, he came to the world and filled his eyes and filled his ears. When they come, such master comes are sent down to the world for the guidance of child humanity, they come up, they break the seal. When we come to him, we are, spiritually speaking, blind. The word blind does not mean those who have got no eyes on the forehead, but whose inner eye is not open. So when their soul or their attention is withdrawn from all outside, completely at the feet of soul at the back of the eyes, the demonstration on which given by him to whosoever who comes to him now devotion is love. Those are hungry, they food for the hungry. Those are thirsty, they water for the thirsty. So, by God's grace, who is an urge for that, naturally such masters do appear. Guru appears when the child is ready. When fire burns, oxygen comes to help, unhelpful. When the child is born, nature provides milk and mother before birth. That's the law of nature. So when you meet such a master, you go to him, he gives him something to start with. It is just like a man comes up who gives a talk on the business lines, principles, very wonderful talk he does with. With all his informative talk, those who are attending his talk have got no money to with them to start with. Your talk will not help them because they have got no money. If you are so long with your talk, you give him some capital to each one, then your talk is all right. But as you then this, the parable of one landlord giving some talents. To one he gives 50, 40, the other 20, the third 10. Then after some time, the master, or the landlord came back, inquired with that man whom he had given 40. He said he had made 80 now. Second one who had 20, he said he had made 40 now. The third one who had 10, he had made 20 now. And the one who had 5, he asked, what have you done? He said, I've kept it secret. So masters do give something to start with. Of course, that depends on the background of each man. Some are ready, some are more ready, some have got their background also, and those some are, you start afresh now, they are more sincere, more regular. So masters give to all alike the same teaching, the same explanation. How to rise above body consciousness, how to open the inner eyes, some capital is given at the very outset, some more, others less. These are the teachings given by the word of mouth. You see, one third of all teachings is given by the word of mouth and two thirds by receptivity. So unless you have got veneration, devotion for the master, unless you become receptive, heart to heart, you cannot have the two-thirds of the teaching to the zero awaited. So devotion and love is one which can afford us the receptivity. In love and devotion, you see, all duality is gone. It is sold, what's that? All the souls are stuck on anything that makes that into two parts. In love, such a soul which is stuck between two hearts, they make two into one. I and my father are one. So love and devotion means whole attention. Devotion also means attention. With veneration to the one who has given you some capital, a wonderful capital, which nobody can give on earth. It is God's grace working through the master, that gives some capital within you already, you testify that it is so. You have not to wait for that for years till they are not the world. They give the demonstration something to start. Again I will say, this is one third by word of mouth. So receptivity to have two thirds of the remaining teaching by heart, by receptivity. You know, Christ appeared very clearly, I am the vine, thou art the branches. So long as the branches are embedded in the tree, the vines, they bear forth abundant fruit. Those branches which are cut off from the vines, they bear no fruit. You read in Bible like that? Yes. What does it mean? So you are fully devoted. There remains no gap between you and the Master, the God in Him. So you get the other two-thirds of the teaching that He had to give, which cannot be given by word of mouth. So do practices without love or devotion. Do not carry substantial effects, the two-third part of it which is remaining. It is something, by the example you know, one painter of some other country came to a country, he appeared before the king of that place and told that I have a wonderful art of painting, you would allow me to work on that for your presentation, we will show it. And the king agreed, all right, we will ask you to such a big hall, one side, one hall of you, one wall of you. All was allotted to him, all of you go on your painting on that. And the other painters of his country only, they also came up. The king, we also know this art, will you also permit us to show us? All right, then this one curtain was laid in the middle of the hall. One side, those began to work, those who came from the other countries, and others of the same country began to go on painting what they had. So king was coming to visit those things, he used to see those who had come from outside, they were doing something. They were painting flowers and this and that. When he saw the other side, our young country, they were not. Yes, wall was white, wall was nothing, no painting. When the time was over, those who came from the other country, they reported our painting ready for examination. You kindly come and see. King did go and saw the painting, was wonderful, very wonderful. Then the other side, you kindly visit our God too. At the heart of heart, he knew that they have done nothing. He has been watching all that. But when the curtain was taken out, to the great astonishment of the king, he saw the same paintings on the opposite side of the thing, which are done by hand. There are still little spots left which they have there. But even that was not in the reflection on the other side. So what have you done? Sir, we have done nothing. How do you know when two men there are working at, what you say, both competition, nudging one would not like to show his art to the other, did he not? But saying now the same thing, those they had on the one wall, the same thing on the other, and more clear. They ask you, what have you done? Sir, we have done nothing. Then after all, we have been rubbing the wall all the time, so much so that it could reflect what is occurring. You follow? So master and disciple, there is nothing remains between the master and the disciple is one with the master. This reflection, I tell you, is had only by the receptivity. I sent one circular on receptivity, how it is dressed. When nothing remains between you and the master, then that receptivity dwells. Even what is of your own existence, you forget it. I am crucified in Christ. This comes in Phenophysia in Persian world. They appear to be two, as Kabi said, in the words of the people, we appear to be two, but it is those who have not met any master. Those who have not seen the same master within him, the same man. This is what is meant by Christ when he said, I am the vine, thou art the branch. So long as you remain abandoned in me, you bear forceful fruit. This emotion, this receptivity, when man dwells, he becomes two in one and one two. Some civilization says, O Master, let me become a body and you my soul. You be in me, I may in you, may be in you. So the people need not say, but I am other one than you are. I am the same as you are. So this is called Guru Bhakti, the devotion to the Master. This is dwelt only your love for the Master. And when you have love for the Master, then nothing remains between him and you. Love unifies. And I just give you an example. Love is a soul which is stuck between two hearts, then make them one. So love and devotion is more necessary, I would say. By that you get something unpar, I would say. And then this thing is given by the to whom who are receptive. So those who have been initiated, they should be regular. And also their mind is attached to outside things. When you want to go to him, the God wants you to come all alone. And don't bring your children or your body even with you. You forget your body. When two men are sitting in love, you see, and love, do you feel anything of their own self? They are loved. They are in love. Outer ego of the physical body is lost. This is what is to be dwelt, to have the full benefit of the Master teaching. He is God in man, and wishes to make you God in man, man in God. Every king wants his son to be a king, not a minister. Is it not? So every saint who gives to something on the way, master to definition of the world as I explained you last night and now even I put you in few words, they had become the heir, the whole what the master has regarded. And master has the power to give God as a gift. Do you see any other man give such a gift? He makes you, convinces you that there is light in you. Mind, we have been telling whenever I hear about some so-called guru nowadays, I do go over meetings and only hear them what you say. Once night I had to someone, he was being very, very long talk. I sat behind and somebody told it about me that he's there. He began to give talk, look at what is inside, it's all darkness, it is all flesh, it is all the inner, you see, filth, what is in there. If you want to see some consciousness the outside, he went along like that. So poor fellows who didn't like that, not open, they're not to blame. God has not descended in grace, condescended to grace to them. You are fortunate. You have had that privilege. You have seen something of the way, not all. Not even the one third of what you have to give. See? Diaries are meant for that. To drive away all thoughts of otherness from within you. We have those thoughts of the outward enjoyments. Maybe of the eyes, maybe of the ears, maybe of the nose, tongue, or physical contact. When nothing remains there, then you have left all alone. All impressions of the past, which are embedded in the subconscious reservoir of mind, those are cleared. And further, when you judge the certainty, the very idea of your being is also consumed in the fire of love. Quran says, love is such a fire which consumes everything except the beloved for whom it got that love. So this is the way of love, without which you cannot have the full teachings, demonstrations, what the master wants to give the disciple. You remember? There's a prayer who are innocent. May I quote you one example of that? Guru Ram Das was there. His name was Jetha, Jethaji. He came to the master, Guru Amar Das. Generally when the master leaves the body, there are so many people anxious to be mastered after them. Not one, many. Everybody in the mind of mind says, I must become a master. He acts and poses in so many ways so that he may draw the attention of the master. But master sees your heart, not your acting and posing. So what he did, he asked all of those who came to him, all right, raise these platforms here. So many feet wide, so many long, so many deep. He started, you see, what are the masters generally people do away, in the beginning at least. They started raising the platforms. When they are ready, this earth is no good, you see. Demolishing brings earth from there, that's a good earth. Again they started raising the platform. When they were ready, again they were resembled by the master. That's another, all they want. So what was the master thinking? How much color of the mind, how much ego he has lost, how far he has succeeded in such surrender and devotion. So what did he do? He gave him his own place. He became the fourth guru. You follow me? This is meant by the word love, love is devotion.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listen to has been given the title Love and Devotion. It was given at the Unity Church on November 9, 1972 in Vancouver, British Columbia. Our reader tonight is Rick Casey. You may please go ahead, Rick.
Well, thank you, Christine. I will be reading tonight from God-Man, picking up where I left off last time I read in chapter 25, The Nature of Oneness. In Gurbani, it is mentioned that after careful scrutiny within, one comes to an irresistible conclusion that Master is truth and truth is Master, with no distinction whatever between the two. When churning the great sea within, one thing has come to the surface. Guru is Gobind, and Gobind is Guru. O Nanak, there is no difference between the two. The Almighty, in fact, resides in the garb of a saint and works his plan through him. The Kathar, primal principle, resides in the Master, and he becomes the means of salvation for many a soul. One knows nothing of love without a Master, for everyone is devoid of love. Hari resides in the Master, and Blessed Master becomes the connecting link between a Jiva and Hari. Kabir Sahib tells us that he is one with God. Now I am one with thee and feel satiated and blessed. Having reached the highest abode, I am one with him. So much so that one cannot distinguish Kabir from Ram. Similarly, Shamazi Tabriz speaks in the same strain. We have become so united, like body and soul, that hereafter no one can say, I am different from thee. Christ, too, says, I and my Father are one. John 10:30. He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. John 14:9. God and God-man are indeed just like a sea and its tides. Momentarily, as the tides rise and fall, they appear as something different, but they are of the same essence as the water of the parent sea. Exactly the same is a drop of water. When separated from the sea, it is a drop, but the moment it goes into the sea, it loses its apparent individuality and becomes part and parcel of the sea. God is formless, while in God-man he assumes form for instruction and guidance of the people. Nanak has, after careful study of the Vedas and scriptures, come to the conclusion that there is no difference between Parbrahm and Guru. God is the primal sound principle which he gives to the thirsty through a God-man. God resides in a guru and releases the sound current among the aspirants. Established in truth, God Master revels in truth. He is at once the master of truth and truth itself. In every age, he comes down for the benefit of the devotees. In the Holy Bible, we read, the Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us, full of grace and truth. John 1:14. In Gurbani, we have, there is not the least distinction between Satguru and Swami, God in action and God. A contact with the former leads to devotion for the latter. A man of God is called Satguru or Satpurush, and he speaks of Hari alone. Whoever listens to him attains salvation. Guru, being one with the Almighty, is the doer of everything and sustains the entire creation, including the jivas. Guru is the doer and does everything. He is the true Gurumukh. Guru is a conscious co-worker with God and is the sustainer of the entire creation. Guru is the bestower of peace and comfort, and he is the Qatar, great motor power. O Nanak, we live and have our being in him alone. Gosain Tulsidas, the celebrated author of the Hindi Ramayana, speaks of the Guru. Salutation to the lotus of the Guru, who is the ocean of mercy and God himself in human form. His kindly words dispel in us the darkness born of blind attachments. In the Holy Bible, we read that Jesus once asked his disciples, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus said to Peter, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Matthew 16:13 and 16-18. On another occasion, he spoke more clearly to them. "Philip saith unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. Jesus saith unto him, Have I been so long with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, Show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me?" John 14:8-10. Guru Arjan has, in very explicit terms, told us of his oneness with God. "My temples are in the highest heaven, and my kingdom is limitless. My sway is eternal, and countless is my wealth. My glory is known through the ages, and my people live everywhere. I am worshipped by all and sundry, and everyone is devoted to me. My Father is manifest within me, and now the Father and the Son work together. O Nanak, the Son has become a conscious co-worker with the Father, and there is now no difference between the two." In the Hindu scriptures we have, Guru is Brahma, Guru is Vishnu, Guru is Shiva, and Guru is the veritable Parabrahm, and we offer our salutations to the Guru. In Mandukya Upanishad, it is stated, "As the various mountain streams, after passing through different plains, fall into an ocean, and lose their names in separate existence, so do the knowers of Brahma merge in the illustrious, self-lustrous being, losing their names and forms." Here a question arises as to how an all-pervading spirit can come to occupy a limited space in a human body. In Discourse 7 of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna thus sets at rest this question. Not knowing my transcendent, imperishable, supreme character, the undiscerning think me, who am manifest, to have become manifest. Veiled by the delusive mystery created by my unique power, I am not manifest to all. This bewildered world does not recognize me, birthless and changeless. Shalaks 24-25. Again, in Discourse 9, Shalak 11, the Blessed Lord says, not knowing my transcendent nature as the sovereign Lord of all beings, fools condemn me, incarcerated as man. Muslim divines also seem to corroborate this, according to Maulana Rumi. The arm of a peer, or master, is in no way shorter than that of God, and the veritable power of God works through the former. His long arm stretches as far as seventh heaven. His hand is in the hand of God, and no one besides him shows his greatness. In fact, an effulgent sun lies hid in him, and the greatest good lies in knowing him as he is. Again, the Maulana says, the light of truth shines in the heart of a Wali, God-man. If you are a Momin, Guru-man, you may see this as it is. The Prophet once declared that God himself told him that he far transcended the highest heights, the lowest depths, the earth, the sky, and all the heavens. But, strange as it might seem, he could comfortably rest in the heart of his devotees, and he who wished to meet him could find him there. Though he, the Murshid, lives on the earth, yet his soul spreads out in the limitless beyond, which all reasoning and philosophy of the religious cannot reach. Shams-e-Tabriz tells us in this wise, the King of Kings is enthroned in us behind a dense curtain. In the vile garb of flesh, he comes to grant us access to himself. Bulah Shah says, Mola, God, becomes man so as to pull men up from their deep slumber. We have in Gurbani many references to this effect. God himself assumed the name of Ramdas. Greatly intelligent is our God. He himself assumes and takes for himself the title of a saint. O Pipa, Pranva, the sound current, is the only reality and becomes embodied as a Satguru for our instruction and guidance. Satguru is Niranjan, pure, immaculate. Do not consider him as a human being. A devotee of the Lord himself becomes the Lord, but man knows not this mystery. Bhai Gurdas likewise says, Ek Ankar, the one God unmanifest, becomes Akar, the manifest, and assumes the appellation of a guru. He who can tell you of the reality impersonal and put you in contact with reality truth eternal and unchangeable permanence, is no other than personal reality, truth personified. He truly is the primal sound current emanating from the Most High. In order to teach mankind, this sound current becomes materialized in the form of saints. How else can men have spiritual instruction unless the Spirit of God, which the sound current is, takes a human form and lives among them, talks to them face to face, of mysteries both human and divine? This is why Kabir says, Brahma cannot speak as Brahma alone. He too needs a human agency for his self-expression among human beings. We, as human entities, encased in flesh and bones, cannot have an idea of that attributeless, formless one unless he assumes a likeness to our own on this material plane and becomes for us a living God, capable of being seen, heard, and understood. He is at once both God and man, and may be called God-man. He works as a means to an end, a link between man and God. He is Word personified, so that he may impart instructions about God and guidance toward God. Peter the Great, Tsar of Russia, was anxious to learn shipbuilding and the art of navigation. So he went to Holland, disguised in the garb of an ordinary laborer. In the Dutch dockyards, there were many other Russian laborers working for their living, and Peter worked with them, talked to them of Russia and their native land, and often asked them to return with him. These poor people were exiles from their country and would heave sighs because they could not go back however much they wished. Peter told them that the mighty Tsar himself was known to him and he might be able to secure them a pardon. But very few could imagine that a person in tattered clothes like their own could have anything to do with the Tsar. When Peter started on the journey homeward after completing his training, just a few who believed his words accompanied him. When he entered Russia, he was received royally from place to place. When the outlawed laborers saw the honor given Peter, they felt encouraged and confident that he would be able to have the Tsar reverse the decree of outlawry against them. When at last they saw Peter enter his capital and ascend the throne, they were astounded at the change in their co-laborer. The master, like Peter the Tsar, is the King of Kings. He comes into the dockyard or prison house of this world just as an ordinary laborer or prisoner like us. He also earns his living as we do, talks to us of our native land, and infuses in us a longing and desire to return home, and offers to be our companion and guide on the way. A few who put faith in his words and begin to act on his advice, and they are taken out of this vast prison back to the throne of God, where they find the Master in his radiant form, more lustrous than thousands of suns and moons put together. Guru Arjan tells us that he who sent us into exile is now calling us back to his kingdom as his true inheritors and legatees. Again, when Queen Indra Mati completed her course of spiritual discipline and reached Sach Khand, she found her master, Kabir, in the seat of Sat Purush, the true God. Seeing this, she said, "Master, why did you not tell me before that you were Sat Purush yourself? I would have believed you." Kabir, smiling, replied, "I could not have convinced you then." All saints who reach Sat Lok or Anami Desh become one with God and as such rank equal to each other, and none can be said to be greater than the other. He who tries to distinguish a saint from a saint starts headlong for hell. Generally, thousands of people congregate around a Satguru and listen to his discourses, but each one sees him according to his own mental and spiritual makeup. Some consider him as a person of piety. Some take him for a philosopher, and some as just a man of learning. Others regard him as an ideally moral man, and still others as a selfless worker. Rare indeed are the jivas who find God in him. Thus each one finds in him a reflection of what he himself actually is or wishes to become, and so gets from him that quality. For he distributes to each what he merits. As a man in physical raiment, his foremost duty, of course, is man-making. And as God personified, it is revealing or manifesting God. So it all depends on one's own preparedness through the ages. Blessed indeed is the man who is ready for immediate transformation into God. For to such an individual, he at once reveals his godhood, as Krishna revealed his oneness with Kal to Arjuna, when through ignorance he hesitated to perform his duty as a Kshatriya prince. A blind man cannot see one with eyes, nor can he take hold of him, unless the man with sight compassionately takes him by the hand and leads him aright. Similarly, no one can see in a master the master of truth, or truth itself lodged in him, unless he reveals his real self to him. Even those who constantly live with him, including his close relatives, can seldom recognize in him the hidden Godhead. Without the gift of special merit, one can never know of the really intrinsic nature of a saint, his Godhood. He who can see and recognize God in him has indeed found God, for he not only resides in him, but manifestly works through him. He is the pole from where the power of God shines forth and works out the divine will. Bhai Nand Lal says, "God is ever present before thee. See thou his blessed form." Guru Nanak similarly says, "The God of Nanak is ever before him." In the same way, when Naran, later Swami Vivekananda, first met Sri Ramakrishna, he asked him, "Master, have you seen God?" And Ramakrishna replied, "Yes, my child, I have seen him as I see you." Thus, it all depends on our inner vision. If one is gifted with this, or if Sakaru so wishes, he may see the flashes of God's light coming through the Master. The purpose of all spiritual discipline is the restoration of the lost vision to the inner eye, so that we may be able to see God, both as all-pervading in the universe and as deeply concentrated behind the mighty breakwater of the Master. This revelation then depends upon the sweet will of God, and no one can claim it as a right. It is just a pure and simple gift from Him to one who has prepared himself through the ages. Chapter 26, The Blessings of God and the Master. The path of spirituality is not a highway that one may tread easily. It is an arduous and an uphill task, torturous and difficult. In Katha Upanishad we find, "Awake, arise, and get illumination by sitting at the feet of masters. The wise say this way is sharp as a razor and as difficult to walk on." Farid, a Muslim divine of great repute, says, "O Farid, get up and tread the world over in search of some godly man, for then alone can you be truly blessed." In the Holy Quran, this path is termed pul-i-sarat and is termed as sharp as a razor's edge and narrow as a hair. Bahá'í Gurdas also speaks of Gur Sikhi, Master's Path, in the same words, narrower than a hair and sharper than a razor's edge. Because straight, narrow is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Matthew 7:14. In the Vedas, too, there are texts prescribing countless rules and regulations for the performance of yogic asanas and sadhas, so difficult that the thought of them makes one's hair stand on end. With such hardships ahead, how can a puny child of clay, powerless as he is, constantly ridden by mind and matter, entangled in the meshes of blind infatuation, and beset with desires, anger, greed, attachment, and egoism, escape unscathed by himself and become a successful pilgrim on the path? In such a weird setting, all baffling and bewildering, with no way out, God takes mercy on his creatures. He himself comes down in vile man's attire to suffer woe so that his children may be blessed. But again, the same trouble confronts us. Well, I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from Godman chapters 25 and 26. And thank you, Master, for everything.
Thank you, Rick, for reading Master's inspiring words. There were 58 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, gracious Master, for bringing us together to receive your loving guidance and blessings.
When you first withdraw from outside and rise from this iron curtain of the physical body, we see we are not the physical body. There, that Godhood begins to shine within us. We become conscious of it.